The men and boys that make a ritual of watching the daily freight train pass through Moose Lake, Minnesota, may not know that this is the new age. It might not occur to many of them actually to say that the powerful stillness of the forest lakes here make for an excellent meditative atmosphere. However, here in the Northern Heartland, there lives a famous poet, Robert Bly, who has been introducing images of the deep male to a generation of sophisticated men who have forgotten these images, but whose genes somehow remember them. Tracking Bly down is something of a quest in itself. After weeks of calling an answering machine that tells me simply to leave a message and see what happens, and nothing happens, I was surprised when his gruff, half-husky voice finally answers and challenges me rapid-fire to make the prospect of an interview interesting for him, like he's a lion guarding a gate and what is beyond the gate as well. I tell him I want to know about the deep masculine. Who is the wild man, and what is this strange talk of his about castles and keys, shadows and wounds? When Bly finally agrees to let me see him, I know I am past the first mythic portal. When I get to his actual portal in Moose Lake, Bly is quick to greet me. He's a strong, big-boned man with longish white hair, a multicolored vest, and a wrinkled silk cravat. We sit right down at his round table in full view of the lake. Bly fastens his clear blue eyes on me, and I ask him to tell me a little bit about the wild man.
The image of the wild man is an image in heavenly space, in imaginative space. Everyone in the fairy story is inside a single psyche. One can think of the wild man as spontaneity preserved from childhood. Most of us had our spontaneity wiped out by school. It still remains inside. The wild man stands for the positive side of male sexuality, something that Christianity in general denies at all. In fact, the old traditions show many wild men being pushed into the flames by priests. Another thing you can say is that the wild man is that part of us which was activated during the hundreds of thousands of years that we were hunters. That part of the human being inside that's in touch with nature. The wild man is nature, in fact. That is why he is covered with hair in the stories. I think the wild man is standing for that quality of male soul that men do not expect to get anymore from the culture as a whole. The desire and the longing for initiation. You have millions of men now who have not been initiated. They have not been put on any path to their own depth in masculinity, and they are becoming aware of it, and they want it.
A natural life of self-sufficiency and wisdom, initiation into a deeply male world, free and joyous sex. Who wouldn't want the wild man as a friend? Unfortunately, getting in touch with the wild man inside is not so simple. To do so, Bly tells me, we must first off leave the safety and security of our little castles and head for the forests within, where there are no guarantees. Fortunately, there are fairy tales that can act as symbolic maps for these terrains. Here's the beginning of one wild man story called Iron John, a Grimm brothers tale that Bly likes to tell especially to men.
I'll tell you a story. Once upon a time, there were a king and a queen. Their castle was near the forest. There's always a forest near a castle. And that forest was like other forests, except that when anyone went into it, he didn't come back. A group of 10 hunters went and they didn't come back. They sent 20 after them and they didn't come back. So eventually no one went to that part of the forest anymore, except occasionally a hawk or an eagle flew over it. Those are both male birds, and that's an indication it's a male story. One day a young man came and said, anything dangerous to do around here? King said, yes, but I don't recommend it because the return rate is not good. He said, I'll go. So he took a dog with him and he went in. And he walked a while, and eventually a hand came up out of the pond and pulled the dog down. And the boy said, well, this must be the place. So he went back and got a couple of men and some buckets, and he bucketed out the pond, and they found the wild man lying at the bottom.
The pond here is a symbol of a man's deeper self, and the deep self in all men. And the dog stands for whatever nature has given as the reason to dive down in. Bucketing out one's own pond can be a long and difficult process. But sometimes, nature obliges you with one of its famous shoves.
That could be for a man a divorce. It could be a serious car accident. It could be a loss of a job he's had for 10 years. That's called the dog going down. And at that point, you have to decide what to do. You're approaching some depth now. So you can take two possibilities. One is to get drunk, stay drunk for 10 years. Another possibility is to get some buckets and bucket out the pond, which is very slow work, and get down there and find out what's lying at the bottom of this pond. What pulled you down? What brought on the car accident? That wasn't an accident. Your soul is trying to talk to you. It finally got your attention when you hit the tree at 70 miles an hour. And the soul is perfectly willing to do that. And if you get killed in the accident, the soul says, oh, hell, too bad. We lose a lot of dogs.
Just exactly how one buckets out a pond is part temperament and part circumstance. But one thing all the folk wisdom seems to agree on. Every route to the wild man means a descent and a struggle with whatever remains dark and hurt within oneself. Whether you're talking about Ulysses or Luke Skywalker or John Doe, it seems you have to go down to go up.
No ascent without the descent. That was the old pagan view. And Christ has a very clear indication of that when he's in the desert, when he's able to deal with demons. A lot of that was edited out, but it's clear that he was a Jewish shaman working in tremendous depths with wild, insane spirits.
I ask Bly how all this might shake down in everyday life.
My feeling is that you have to redescend again. That means go back and look at your own family and what actually happened to you as a child. In my case, my father was alcoholic. Neglect, the knowledge that your father prefers a bottle to you or your brother, all that violence and implied violence that's in the house, those wounds are too deep to take in when you're small. Like genetically, you expect to be protected. And when it doesn't happen, you can't believe it. So what do? You transcend it. You go up above it. What you're doing now doesn't seem real. I got this job painting houses. But that's not my real job. I'm making love to this woman, but this isn't the real woman. I'm going to take this little trip, but I'm really not in it. You become spiritual, which is what I did.
Escape from one's own wound through spirituality has an old pedigree in our culture, especially for men, who have been taught to emphasize reason and thought over the life of the emotions and the body.
I think it's more difficult for men than for women to make this kind of descent, because our culture doesn't give men permission to go down. They're all supposed to have higher consciousness or get promotions or be higher on the ladder. It's fantastic how many images there are which imply ascension. It's odd, you see, that men would be active in exploring and sailing and skiing and surfing and business, and yet in the field of emotions to be passive. Isn't that odd? See, women are often more active in those fields.
The story of Iron John continues.
They bring him out. They take him back to the castle. The king builds an iron cage for him. He's then called Iron John. Iron has the same implication in fairy stories of imprisoning men as glass does for imprisoning women. Then he lives in the cage in the courtyard. This is a little bit like the 60s. The stones exhibited the wild man in public, but in a cage, of course.
Now, the king and queen have a young son. One day, while they're away, he is playing with his beautiful golden ball in the courtyard, and it rolls right into the wild man's cage. Twice he asks for the ball back, and twice the wild man tells him, "I'll give you your ball back when you let me out of the cage." The boy naturally refuses. This is a dance that could take 35 years in our time. But after the third attempt, the boy tells the wild man something new. He doesn't know where the key to the cage is kept. It seems that the key has been entrusted to the queen, who has left it neatly under her pillow. And to get the key, the boy must steal it. Bly helps explain the message here.
The mother is in the world to civilize a young boy. That's her job. Women dream of my son the doctor, right? My son the Jungian analyst. They don't dream of my son the wild man. So therefore, in order to become or get in touch with the wild man, he's going to have to get the key out from under his mother's pillow. Key has to be stolen. Now, the soft male that you're talking about is the one who doesn't do that work. I remember being with a group out in Seattle, I think it was, maybe 200 men and women, and we were talking about this point in the story. And a wonderful soft male in the audience spoke up, and he said, "Robert, I don't like this thing about stealing the key. Couldn't we just sort of get together a group and go to the mother and say, 'Mom, could we have the key?'" It was very interesting because I felt the soul of every woman in the room rise up to kill him. Men like that are dangerous because they won't steal the key. They will continue to be dependent on women all of their lives. If they need something like freedom, they go and ask the woman for it. She can't give it to them. No mother worth her salt would give the key to the boy anyway. Women understand that very well. If you can't steal it, forget it. Just stay home. Come and kiss mommy. You don't need the key. Come on, kiss mommy. Women like soft males for a while, and they suddenly begin to realize he has not taken the key, and that really means that he doesn't have that energy to protect them either when they're in trouble.
Bly is quick to point out that all this is not an indictment of the soft male.
The soft male is not an ugly or evil person. They're very fine. They're very protective of the earth. I like them a lot. But oftentimes a soft male perhaps will be brought up in a house maybe without a father, or the mother will have a lot of pain and she will start telling the young male about it when he is only 2 or 3, I mean 5 or 6 or 10 years old, sitting at the kitchen table. Well, that's all very well, but she's invading his generation. And then oftentimes he'll find a woman later who will also share her pain, as they say, and he will hear it, and that hearing is fine, but it doesn't help to get the key out from under the mother's pillow. Jung said, if you are brought up primarily by your mother and introduced to feeling by your mother, the chances are overwhelming that you will also have the feminine view of the masculine. Well, there's nothing evil about the feminine view of the masculine, but it's quite different than the masculine view of the masculine. So that was very painful for me when I realized that is probably so. So I was one of these people. My mother had a lot of pain. And that's why when I walk into a Kmart or something like that, I feel a suspicion of certain men who are there. I don't see them clearly because my values were primarily female values. So my point is that this soft male is not the end point. It's a stopping and you go through.
The boy in our story does steal the key from his mother, incidentally wounding his own finger while opening the cage. And he and the wild man go off together to the forest for a time. The ground is ready for the boy's initiation into the next stage of maleness. And this is something he needs an older, wilder man to give him. This initiation is the going through that Bly means, something our culture, for the most part, sadly lacks.
Initiation is a welcoming into the world of men. In New Guinea, they say, a boy cannot be changed into a man without the active intervention of the older men. A lot of young men in the culture, you know all those men in the gangs? Young men in the gangs? No one has ever welcomed them into the male world. The story says that the arc for men is immensely long. And you can only learn it from other men. Old men are not doing that now. They're being with their buddies somewhere on Wall Street, and they're paying no attention to the younger men. So I think it's a very serious moment. The men have got to start doing their work.
Bly says that some of this initiation bonding between older and younger men occurs at the men's conferences he runs with the Jungian Robert Moore and others. Once, he told Moore that he senses from some of the participants a longing for an older king in their lives, and that he is often cast in this role himself. He was delighted by Moore's comment in response.
Robert said, what they long for more than that is to see the king and the queen. The powerful man and the powerful woman sitting together. The percentage of difference in the genetic structure between a man and a woman is a little over 2%, 2.1004 or something like that. The interesting thing is that that difference is present in every cell of the body. You're not only male in your brain, you're male in every part of your, every cell of your body. For both men and women, the sense is that since they represent opposite poles of a magnet, that it's important that the magnetic energy of each pole be as strong as possible, and then sparks go across. Women say, well, I'm glad what you're doing. What's the sense of being a wild woman if there's no more wild men around?
This is Adam Phillips.